So today, what I want to do is to normalize renormalization. No, it's like renormalization is a taboo. Some people just say renormalization. And what I want to do is to make a normal thing. We can all talk about the renormalization. Okay? And here is a myth. The myth is renormalization is the dark magic to cure infinities. In perturbation theory, in QFT. Okay, you have heard about this? Sounds familiar? Very good. So today's lecture I want to do is trying to say no. It doesn't have to be for curing infinities. When it's finite, you still want to do renormalization. Actually, this is, you're going to learn that in QFT too. But I'll give you some different example. It doesn't even have to be in perturbation theory. I can also give you a very short example of that. And of course, it doesn't have to be in 2QFT. We have been long doing renormalization before QFT. So we can see this myth, the only true part is renormalization is still a dark magic. The rest is not true. And we're going to practice this dark magic in tomorrow's tutorial. I have hopefully has distilled the interesting part to do for you to do in tomorrow when we calculate the beta function of QED. And there is some loop integral calculation is sent to the appendix. But we definitely don't have time to do a loop integral during tutorial. Okay. So here is a story. It's tangentially relevant, so I'm going to tell you. So when Dan and I used to play Magic the Gathering, you can ask Pedro. Pedro is very enthusiastic. We used to play all together. And then we arrive at, you know, the store, card store. And then we met this new guy, and then, you know, you introduced each other, and then we were like, he was like, what do you do for a living? And we're like, ah, we are physicists. And he asked, so are you the real physicists or the theoretical ones? Okay, so we're gonna redefine renormalization. So this is our new definition, which we're gonna see. This is actually Mick Combs' definition. And it says, you will have a physical problem. With interaction. Well, if it's a free problem, we all know the problem. There's nothing to renormalize. So there's interaction. And normally there are scales. And then there is something called the bare parameter. So bare parameter for Mick-Combs means free parameter. It's like the parameter that already happened in the free theory or in the theory before. But there are other definitions. It's not a physical. And the other theoretical parameter. Theoretical parameter. It's basically when theorists writing down a theory, there's going to be some parameter, a number that are multiplying their Lagrangian interaction. And they just pat on their head, write down that parameter without really considering what's the deep implication of that. So this strict theoretical parameter is like a number. They write down. For us. Okay, then the if you have this definition, then the renormalization process is to replace the bare parameter, which is not a physical, it's theoretical, by the dressed parameter, which dressed is another way to say renormalized. And this dressed parameter, okay, renormalized. Depends on scale. Okay, so that's our definition. And some other reference I have, I think the author called Arnold says, it's socially unacceptable to have bare human beings. Hence, it's physically unacceptable to have bare parameters. So it's unacceptable to have these non-physical things. That's why we do renormalization. Okay. I have seen that your relativity course proceeded to black hole. So finally, I can ask you this question. It's arguably the worst joke of mine. Well, it's actually, I have a stamp of approval to be the worst joke by Neil Turok, but he didn't listen to too many of my jokes. So the question is, so how many of you still know Larry David? Larry David is a comedian that who writes Seinfeld and writes some other show. His name is important. That he poses himself and then he later he gets divorced. It's called Curb the Enthusiasm. It's very interesting talking about marriage. I was scared before, but after I'm married, somehow I'm less scared. Okay, so the question is, Larry David used to like to take a bath and drink a cup of Earl Grey. But after he's divorced, then he can't do it anymore. Do you know why? Like, he just can't do it anymore. Okay, I'll write the answer here. Because nature forbids a naked So Larry is relevant for our course. Well, in a feedback form, you can tell me if this is the worst or the best joke. But when Larry put his bath gel in the tub, so this part is serious. So when Larry is taking a bath and he's putting the bath gel in the tub, I mean, if he had waited for the gel just to diffuse, that would be a very long time. So the common sense is for him to stir the water or have some running water and introduce some eddies, scales, see, eddies, and turn it into a turbulence diffusion. A turbulence diffusion is much faster than you just stare at it, which is called a molecule diffusion. And in 1877, so there's some history, and this guy called Bost. So he decided to describe the enhanced diffusion by increased diffusion coefficient. So this is the arguably the earliest example of renormalization. It's a little ad hoc. It's like empirically based on experimental fact. I propose that this coefficient is changed to be depending on the scale. So if you can do some experiment with bus stops, and then if you disturb a little bit, it'll be different from you disturb a lot. Like in a smaller scale, a bigger scale. So make a calm claim, this is renormalization because it has many scales based on the eddies. And then there is a bare quantity, which is the normal diffusion coefficient. So if you just put the gel there and let it be, so that diffusion is normally called the molecular diffusion. And the bare quantity is replaced by a renormalized quantity. That depends on scale. Yep.
You mentioned that the bare quantity is not physical.
No, bare quantity for us, for quantum field theory people, is not physical. For the condensed matter statistical physics people, they just mean that a quantity in the previous successful theory. But no longer successful. So they want to figure out a way. And this guy figured out, you just replace the unsuccessful quantity by something dependent on scale. So that's the earliest example. It's so early that I couldn't even find a copy of the original paper with the help with Amanda, still not successful. I was planning to ChatGPT the French into English. But the next example, in 1922, in this example, we can see how this works. Like they actually have derivation how which quantity is replaced by which quantity and how is it replaced. So let's take a look at this quantity. So it's the Debye Hückel theory of electrolyte. Oh, you can think about it, it's electron gas. So the system what do we get out of this is there is a charge will be replaced by renormalized effective charge. So that's the summary of what I'm going to do now. And the assumption is system is neutral. And then there is n free electrons. And then the positive charge are spatially uniform. And what we're doing is to figure out, the goal is to compute the potential of a single electron. So you imagine there's some electron in the middle, and you want to figure out at some distance r, what's the electric potential, except now there's, you know, all these n electrons and spatially uniform positive charge over there. Well, the way not to do it is to actually consider every individual electron and positive charge contribution. That's going to be a very tough calculation. So what these people says, here is my used to be working theory. So this is their bare charge. It's physical. In the theory, there's only one charge and nothing else. And they claim the only effect of this electron cloud and the positron cloud should be replacing this charge by some effective charge. So that's the computation we're going to do. So for these people, E is the negative number. So it's really the electron charge. So now we're actually doing the computation to show you that things gets replaced. Okay, so how do we figure out the electric potential? This you should learn in classical physics. What do you need to figure out the electric potential? Someone says Gauss. Gauss is the correct answer. Okay. This is Gauss's law. Gauss's law says if you want to figure out the electric potential, you should figure out the density, charge density. And for us, it is E times whatever the number density of the electrons are, and subtract the positive charge. But the positive charge are uniformly distributed, so this is a number. But the electrons are could be moving around, so this is a function of r. So this is the total charge density of the system. Right? Gauss's law tells us we have to figure out what's charge density. And charge density tells us we need to find the number density. Okay, I hope most of you have seen this before, is that in the system that has some energy, then I can write off the probability as some e to the minus e over kt divided by the partition function. Yes? Looks familiar? Okay, that's all I need from statistical mechanics. Then, if you know the probability, it's easy to find the number density because I know that the total number of the electron is n. But here is the cool thing to do, is I'm going to send the r goes to infinity then we know that the energy is zero for an electron system. If you send it all the way to infinity, there is no energy. So the exponential drops off and you get this. And hence, the conclusion is nR over n infinity is just the exponential. Okay. So that's it. Right? We're looking for the number density. We can plug it back to get the charge density, and then we can plug it back to find this potential. So let me combine this together for you, which is minus 4 pi e times n times infinity. And there's the exponential we figure out just now. And then minus 1. So that's plugging in this back to this back to that. So this thing has exponential is the electron density. The one that just gave you 1 is the positive density, positive charge density. And now we're going to do linear expansion to use the e to the thing minus is e minus, this is 1 minus. So then you get a positive 4 pi e and epsilon divided by kT. And now I realize, wait, this I know this energy. Energy is nothing but an E times the electric potential. And turns out, this differential equation is solvable. And if you look it up into some differential equation book, it says the answer is this. Where everything like this, they equals to LD to the minus 2, which makes sense. There is a nabla square here. It's going to give you some length. We're just going to call that particular length the Debye length. But now you are like, wait a second. This looks really like my original phi equals E over R. As long as I replace E by this thing. It says the effective charge is getting weaker as you go further scale from it. Like there's a whole, this thing is screening the charge. You're not going to see it as well. And you can see in this example, there are no infinities. We simply desire to find what's the effective charge, what's the renormalized charge to describe this theory. And of course, this has nothing to do with QFT. I mean, 1922, that's probably before QFT is born. So this is the first example I want to show you, is that in some completely different system, you can still do, you are actually obliged to do the renormalization. Otherwise, you are not describing the system right. Yes? Passed? Okay. So I figure out, I showed you It's a sort of an electrodynamics problem. And if I show you that you have to do renormalization in quantum mechanics, and it can be like, oh, we have to do QED. In QED, you also have to do renormalization, you know, in electrodynamics and in quantum mechanics, you both need to do renormalization. Okay, so next example, coming from quantum mechanics. And this example is very nice. So it's a two-state system. I hope you guys are all very excited about two-state system. Oh, you think it's boring. But the like one excitement is it's definitely solvable. If it's a two-state system, I can do it. Okay? Solvable. And you don't need a perturbation theory. It's just solvable. Okay, so this two-state system is presented to you like this. So it has Hamiltonian, and it has, of course, a free Hamiltonian and the interacting Hamiltonian. And then, so you have H0 equals one state is at energy zero, and the other one is at W. And the interacting Hamiltonian is given by you like this. So J carries the mass dimension, lambda is just a number to make the unit look right. Okay, so you're like, two-state system. Is it really necessary you separate it into free Hamiltonian and interacting Hamiltonian? I can solve this system. It has four entries. I can find the eigenvalue, and then the problem is solved. I think that's like our quantum mechanics. If you have the eigenvalue, we consider the problem solved. Okay, so this system is not terribly hard at all. I'll write down the eigenvalue equation. And you get 1e plus g e minus omega minus the off diagonal square equals 0. Yeah, everybody agree? That's the eigenvalue equation. And then there is some quadratic equation solving, which I wouldn't bother you to do in class. But just trust me, if I solve the above thing, it gives this. What's the problem? Why do we need to renormalize, right? This should be exactly the question you ask. Look, answer. Okay, so it turns out in this question that lambda can be large, just like a cutoff. And you're like, okay, what's the problem lambda being large? Well, if lambda is large, G lambda is also large. And then what's the problem? What does this becomes? If G lambda is large. Plus minus G lambda. Okay, now it's getting a little bad, right? Because the energy level you solve is physical, and now they are just some large number. But why can't they be large number? Well, one way to argue is, if your energy level is going to G lambda, but a G is a coupling constant that depends on, well, it's a coupling constant. And if you claim this G is physical, means you can measure it. And if you can measure it, means there's error, experimental error always exists. And now you can see you're solving the problem, claim, oh, this physical energy is going to depend on this G, but it's very sensitively. You make any small error in your experiment, your prediction is going to be vary by huge because it's multiplied by lambda. So we don't want our results to be so sensitive to some systematic error happening in the lab. We want to measure the charge, and the output is some physical quantity is depends on mildly on the experimental result. Otherwise, it's not good, right? There's like year one, the experimental result is plus minus 5%. You're like, oh, the energy level is like this. And year two, they do a better experiment. Also, like, energy level is like this. It doesn't agree with the fact that the energy level itself is also physical. So the proposal, so this is very sensitive to G. Also, you know, it goes blows up to be infinity if you take lambda to be infinity, which is also not nice. So then the proposal is that G is just a parameter. Whoever written down this theory, say it's the theoretical bare parameter before we figure out it's true, it's probably not the correct one. So the proposal is that why don't we take a G lambda to be some G renormalized? See, we're replacing the bare parameter with a renormalized parameter. And you're like, what does this give us? If you compare the Hamiltonian, you will realize you get rid of the lambda, basically. So if you look at your renormalized Hamiltonian, you're like, great, now I can even send the lambda to be infinity. Who cares? Nobody is sensitive to lambda. And you have your Hamiltonian given by this. Then you can solve this problem. This problem has no problem at all. You don't have lambda. And this is actually, in some sense, resemble what we're going to do in QFT is whenever there's something wrong, we blame the parameter. It's like, it must be the parameter, must be some person who didn't pick the correct parameter to start with. And that's a key step when we do renormalization, is to blame the parameter. The parameter must be the problem, because this theorist just pat on their head, write the parameter down. Nobody knows if that parameter has anything to do with physical quantity. Okay, again, see? In this example, you don't have perturbation theory. You can just solve exactly. And you still want to renormalize, because you say, okay, my physical quantity is something, it's either plus infinity or minus infinity. Okay. So I think we'll take a break now. And in the next half, I'll try to get closer to QFT.
Quantity and the actual expression, so that no infinity. Because it's expanding the term of
how do we know that we are not to blame the parameter and like there's no physical
we did in that example was actually just change the gravity. But the point is that G lamp and G renormalized, they're both physical.
You know, G renormalized, you're saying
the point is, if I take G renormalized to infinity, do I add that?
So what is generally mathematically like a problem? This is like parameter choice. What's the structure you are thinking of in that way?
Well, because if like if you do this parameterism without you answer, and then it's like okay, what do I do with infinity, right? Guys, is if you pick the correct parameter, then for the
so what is a couple? Where does it be?
That's the thing. It's just someone that's theoretical physics, right? That is not physics. Like it's just right on the number in front of you. It's like the boundary is correct. Like it's simply just right on five. But it means that it's going to be crazy. So let's see if this is going to be cross. Okay, let's restart.
The other way to do is kind of switch.
Okay, so.
Very right.
Why is
New Torque says coordinates are very suspicious. His original quote. Coordinates are very suspicious. You should always suspicious about your coordinate. If you get some infinity, like a coordinate infinity, as you just see in the relativity class, maybe they are not the real infinity. The only thing you need to do is to pick the coordinately in some other way. And so the lesson we learned from what we just did is that the theorist pick some bare parameter to put it in their Lagrange, but they might just be very bad. So we're gonna blame the bare parameter. It's the key outcome of the quantum mechanics example. is that we should be very suspicious of the parameters and blame them when things goes wrong. Okay, so now what I want to give you is a generic example. Okay, it's a generic QFT example without knowing what's the theory. What's the parameter? Well, you probably know what's this parameter. And then show you the four step to do renormalization. Okay, so this is a completely generic example. I'm just using it to highlight the steps. So let's see the setup of this. The setup is that F and G are two observable. G is coupling. And you have F as some expansion. So now we are going into the perturbative theory. Some perturbation theory. And G, on the other hand, is also some perturbation theory. Well, now here is the fun part, is S is some divergent stuff. So actually you can't make any sense of these two expressions because S is some divergent stuff, which happens all the time in QFT. You do any calculation, there's divergent stuff shows up. Okay. Okay, the first step, step one, is to regularize. For example, introduce some cutoffs. This one has kind of necessary. If you never do this step, you will be staring at some divergent stuff. There's no step two. So the first step is to make it not divergent. And so I'm just going to say these are S lambda instead of S. So S is some divergent stuff. S lambda is what happens when cutoff is introduced. Normally it's a momentum integral, and then if you introduce a cutoff, it's no longer divergent. And your answer depends on lambda, that's the problem. Okay, so step two is my favorite step, is to blame the coupling constant. I mean, look, what else can I do? F and G, the people told me these are observables. Can't blame them. Lambda we just introduced. So in this expression, the only scapegoat is coupling constant. And we say coupling constant is suspicious. We shall expand in terms of observables. Okay? Expand in terms of observables. Okay, let's do that. I say G is suspicious. The big G though, big G is observable. So I'm totally allowed. Well, I'm always allowed to do this, but I'm also very happy to do it because I blame the coupling constant and expanded in terms of the real deal. See, these are observables. So a lot of things, what do you see in a QFT book, give you some Z numbers. And all they do is to connect the Lagrangian observer, the bare parameter, to the renormalized parameter. Okay, you can see that there are some infinities. Doing this is going to make this, like the coordinate change you did in relativity is infinity. You can hide the infinity where you want. It's like infinity is like a squishy. You can squish them around, but they don't disappear. Yep.
Couldn't this be that I can make sense of the function and that it would be converged to the
shunting? In this particular thing, yes, you can actually do the geometric sum. Is that what you're saying?
If you want to express your coupling constants in terms of the observables, this is
how do we know this can happen? Very good question, because that's step three. Perfect question. Step three is called a consistency check. And in the fancy word that you're going to hear later tomorrow, it's called the renormalization prescription. I really don't like that name. Because that's all it is. You are doing a consistent check. But very good. We need to do consistent check. What are alpha 1? What are alpha 2? Does it even exist? What I'm doing, right? So the consistent check is, once I assume an expansion, I can stick it back to this calculation. And I demand that this still works, because I already have a relationship between G and the observable and the coupling. Now I kind of just randomly assume there is another relationship. They better be the same relationship, they should be compatible. So now that's what we're going to do now. So let's take a G. It says the first term, next time out. So the first term is the coupling. And the next term is it squared. Square times this S lambda minus one thing. Okay, since I'm doing a perturbation theory, I decided that the later part is irrelevant to me. Okay, we definitely need to do the consistent check, because we have two relationships relating two of the same thing, the observable and our coupling constant. Okay, so let's compare order G gives me alpha 1 equals 1, right? And the next order, well, the left-hand side has no next order, which means on the right-hand side, they better cancel. So there is alpha 2 plus alpha 1 squared times this thing. But they're regularized, so that's fine. Okay? Well, but alpha 1 is 1. So the all it says is alpha 2 is minus this thing. So as well, if I'm only expanding to second order perturbation theory, so that's I conclude. Alpha 1 is determined by something, alpha 2 is determined by something. And you're like, how do I know this is works, right? The step 4 is to check that the cutoff, you can remove the cutoff. Cutoff can be removed. If you have all your observable, but the lambda is still there, you're not doing it right. So, well, we just showed you can, this one is, there is no problem with this one. So we can check as a consistent check, we can check F. So this is G, small g. And then there is the next step. That's all I want to, that's all I care. So what I did is now I have the blame the coupling constant expression. I can put it back in F to see what does F look, did I cure the divergence in F? Well, you can see first term is G and the second term has this from the first term and that from the second term. And then you can see to the second order, it's fine. It's all B in terms of G. So basically the idea is if you have an observable express in observable, there should be no divergence, no infinity anywhere. If you use the correct coupling constant, such as a observable. So renormalized quantity sounds scary, but really they are observable. Okay. So for the rest of the time, I want to follow a hint of renormalization to actually give you a toy model of QFT, because any non-toy model will involve me doing loop integrals on the board. Well, first, I don't want to do loop integral on the board. Second, you wouldn't like me to do loop integral on the board. So we're going to see a toy example, say how this works for QFT. Okay? So it'll take me some time to set the stage. The stage is we have a toy model. And this stage has a G0. Which is bare coupling, which is dimensionless. And then there is also F of X is the Feynman diagram computation of the coupling. You can see this computation should it be, you know, finite? Should it be observable? So the result is given by this Taylor expansion. First order is G0 because it's tree level. And the second will come with some integral. And third order has some other integral. And dali dali dala. And this is what the Feynman diagram give you. And they are EU defined. And you want to solve, you want to get rid of the infinity. Or just expand this thing in terms of something that is physical, observable, right? So the idea is we have one parameter. We only need to do one experiment to determine it. So the proposed experiment is done at x equals mu. Okay. I need to say something. So this reference likes to use x as momentum, and for some later reason that I actually stick with it. Sorry. Think about these x, they are all momenta. And then, so if you did the experiment x equals mu, which means f echo x equals mu is physical. There is nothing more physical than something measured in an experiment. And it's finite. Which means f of x, which tell me measuring the coupling at some other scale, should be function of this f, of this thing you measure. And it'll be like a finite function. It'll be a very nice thing because you're expanding some physical in terms of something else as physical. And here is the part that I think it's very confusing, but everybody does it, is that they decided to call this thing the renormalized coupling. It's really just the observable measured at a certain scale. And they call this the renormalization prescription. But in your head, it should be like, whenever you see renormalized coupling, just that thing. It's probably, I don't know, they don't want to write fx as a function of fx equals mu. It might be just harder to write, and they gave it a new name. That's all it is. But the point is, fx in terms of this gr or fx equals mu should be finite. Except we have these things to deal with. So let me just review, before we do it, I want to review our steps one more time. So step one, we're gonna introduce a regulator. Let's turn that integrals into something we can make sense of. Yeah? That has to be the step one, otherwise we just stare at this. And step two, blame the coupling constant. It's funny because then you realize in QFT coupling constant is not a constant. But when it's actually the constant in Lagrange, that's when you should blame them. Okay, so blame the coupling constant means expand one in terms of the other. And remember, we need to do consistent check. so that we can get what's the expansion. Right, we are finding these things, finding the relationship. And the last step is finally express fx in terms of f mu it's like you introduced some cutoff, some mu, which is the scale that you do experiment, and now there is a GR, but now you can take lambda goes to infinity, and lambda disappeared. So let's see how this magic works. So now that's a general description, what we're gonna do. The general steps. Now we'll finally see our first concrete example in QFT. My toy model. So suppose we have some observable expressed in our bare coupling and some integrals we can't make sense. Okay. We're not going to need this. It's written for completion. Just focus on this one. Okay, so the toy model, the toyness of the model is that instead we do a four momentum integral, we are going to do a one dimensional. And you can see it gave you the same log divergence. Whenever you do a real problem, just replace it by whatever four momentum shows up. Yeah, it's same log divergence. So, just makes our problem doable. Okay, so, well, step one, and this step you have done before, you take the I and cut it off at the lambda. If I don't do this simplification, it'll be a real model. Then you'll be seeing me doing a lot of integrals. Okay, so it captures the log divergence, and we'll see what's going on. And step one, I replace infinity by lambda, done. No longer divergent, but still don't want the lambda show up in my final result. Okay, you can see in the first order, there's nothing I can do. In the first order, G0 equals GR. There's no more expansions. So the step two starts at the second order. And we'll blame this G0 being not being a good parameter. And we'll write it to be the good parameter. Okay, so far so good. Lambda, and blame the parameter. No idea what's the coefficient, what's the delta 2, but that's what we're going to figure out. So step 3, consistency check. Okay, let's just assume this is the good parameter. Now what happens? Okay, so I blame the parameter, and it's time to stick back to the original expression. G naught, get a substitute by that. If there's G naught square, I only need to keep GR square. Yes? And then I'm going to collect them order by order. First order, second order. And here is the key step. The key step is the consistent check is also known as use your renormalization prescription. Oh, in other words, was like, wait, remember, this is nothing. But when this thing is measured at a mu. So that's what they call to the renormalization prescription, which means we could have just writing this the whole time. And the people like it to give another name. Okay, so that means I should take this and take x equals mu and see what happens. What happens is delta 2 plus I1 mu should equal 0. Right? At x equal mu, they are already equal. So the second order must cancel. That's in the future, you might see this as the counter term and the loop diagram cancels. Okay. So what does this tell me? Well, it gives me what is the delta 2. Delta 2 is minus I1 lambda at a mu, but I know what is my 1. So it's 0 lambda dt. And I can do this integral. This coming from this should be canceling because the renormalization prescription tells you when x equals mu, there's nothing in front. And you can see this is where we squeezed the infinity. The infinity has been squeezed into the expression of delta 2, but the delta 2 is the relationship between the bare coupling and the renormalized coupling. Okay, so now it's just last step. I have f lambda x equals gr plus gr square And now, so I'm gonna plug in this. Okay? So which means it will have the I1 lambda x subtracting I1 lambda mu. Okay, let's do it. The only difference between the two expressions is one of them is mu, the other one is x. And now, so I'm just subtracting the log. And now we'll do one more step to separate it with log mu over x plus log x plus lambda over mu plus lambda. And here is the final step. You take lambda goes to infinity, it's log 1, disappear. Indeed, you manage to using the renormalized coupling, you manage to express what you want, and there is no more infinity. And the theory is not renormalized. And of course, the important thing to remember is when we do this, there is definitely a mu dependence of GR. You want to do the measurement at any scale, and then your renormalized coupling will depend on that scale. That's what I want to say today.